This is Sunday Magazine, and with me on the phone this morning is Dr. Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center. Dr. Gabriel, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, John. It's always good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you again, too. And this morning we are going to sort of follow up on our last conversation, which was about the war on cancer and ways that we're winning the war on cancer. But this morning particularly, you wanted to talk about lung cancer.
Yes. John, the war on cancer, actually, it's basically two fronts. Three fronts. One front is cancer prevention. Ultimately, prevention is better than cure. And we're all trying hard to find ways to prevent cancer. The second one is to detect cancer early, because we think if we detect it early, then you have a better chance to beat it. Of course, the third war is the war that you fight it when you diagnose it at advanced stage. And we are making real incremental steps, small milestone steps in every single one of those. And today we're talking about the second category, which is how and should we diagnose cancer early. As you know, we have done this for other diseases like cervical cancer. And in fact, that process we call pap smear almost lowered the incidence of that cancer by about 90%. We talk about the breast cancer doing mammograms. You talk about PSA to detect prostate cancer. All of them seem to have lowered the death rate of these cancers. Lung cancer has always been a challenge, and there has been studies done over the last 30 years trying to diagnose lung cancer at earlier stage. And in the old days, people used techniques like chest X-ray or sputum cytology, where you collect the sputum that people cough up and analyze under a microscope to see if you can detect cancer earlier than normal. Now, why do we want to do that? Because lung cancer is dreadful. About 75% of the times, it's diagnosed at a late stage.
So there's definitely a lot of room for improvement as far as early diagnosis. And like you said, in these other cases, that's been an important way that in other cancers we've been able to, reduce the damage that it's done.
Yes, and room for improvement translates into a challenge that gives you an opportunity. So the previous studies didn't show a real benefit using chest X-ray or cytology, sputum cytology, or both. This month, there were two studies. In fact, there was one study that was published in Cancer, which is the Journal of the American Cancer Society, which confirmed results of another study published about more than a year ago. In these studies, they took people who are at very high risk of developing lung cancer. And that risk identification is easy, because we know 90% of lung cancers happen in people who smoke and smoke heavily. So they took these thousands of heavy smokers, folks that smoke more than two packs a day, and who are 55 years old or older, and divide them into two groups. This is what we call randomization. This is the way we do research. One group, they had a CAT scan done every year for 3 years. The other group, they only had CAT scan when they developed symptoms that the treating doctor felt that something has to be done. At the end of the study, you know, every year 150,000 people die from lung cancer. In that study, the death rate in the group that they had the CAT scan every year for 3 years, the death rate dropped by 20%.
That's a pretty significant drop.
That is a huge savings in life. And the conclusion is, when you do CAT scans serially every year for 3 years in this study, you will detect cancer at slightly earlier stage, which gives you a better opportunity to cure it with surgery plus minus chemo radiation.
That's pretty exciting that, as you said in the past, there really hasn't been much success, and now all of a sudden you've got studies showing that these CAT scans are proving useful in early detection.
So the question, exactly, and you know, it is exciting because the number of lives, see, we should always, when we look at these studies, we should always look into the number of lives saved. And to save that number of lives more than 20,000, that's huge.
That is huge.
In any terminology you use. Well, what I want to talk to you about, John, is who really. Of course, this is becoming a standard now. So, number one, the public should know that now we are convinced that doing CAT scan to the chest will actually detect lung cancer earlier, and that will result in a better chance of beating it all together. The question really is, who should be tested and how often? Now, the how often, we don't know. What the study was designed that you do the CAT scan once a year for 3 years. Does that mean that somebody who's 55-year-old, you do it for 3 years and you quit? That we don't know. I think other studies will need to be done in the future, but until other studies are done, what should we do?
And this study, you said, was just done with heavy smokers. Are just
heavy smokers.
Right.
Good point. Only those who smoke smoke more than 2 packs a day. Now, there are, in my experience, I think we talked about other risk factors in the last discussion we had. From my experience, and I have had over 25 years experience in treating all forms of cancer. From my experience, I have never seen a lung cancer patient who is less than 50 years old who did not smoke cigarettes and marijuana at the same time.
Okay.
So I know marijuana has been romanticized. It's good for cancer, good for appetite. Fact is, marijuana is a potent carcinogen, and it is strongly linked to lung cancer.
And when you combine it with the cigarettes and your experience, boy, if you combine those two, then you have a higher chance of developing cancer.
And the chance is not only additive, it is actually compounded, meaning, in simple English, if the risk of getting lung cancer in smokers is 1%, and if the risk of getting lung cancer from marijuana is 1%, when you do both, the risk is not 2%. The risk is 5%.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Compounded. So, and I'm worried because some reports are suggesting that high school kids, up to 70% of them, do at least experiment with marijuana. And we do know it's still cool for kids to smoke cigarettes. I am concerned that we might see more lung cancer at a younger age. Although, generally, I think the number of lung cancers is declining, but I'm concerned that that decline might be hampered by this trend of people smoking more marijuana.
Well, and like we mentioned last time, you don't really see the results until, decades later, and so it's hard to tell if the trends in smoking cigarettes and marijuana today may result in trends of cancer in 20 years, and that can be concerning.
Correct. And in fact, the same applies to asbestos. You expose somebody to asbestos now, you will not start getting risk of cancer until 20 years plus from now. And that's important to mention also because the effect of asbestos on causing cancer is similar to marijuana. So asbestos is well known for causing mesothelioma, but in fact, the number of lung cancers caused by asbestos is much more than the number of mesotheliomas. But why do we also always link mesothelioma to asbestos? It's because mesothelioma only happens in people exposed to asbestos. So there's this link that's inseparable. But the fact is, more people die of lung cancer from asbestos than from mesothelioma.
It's a bigger problem than just that.
Yes, and also the exposure to asbestos and smoking is also compounded, just like it is with marijuana, and even more with marijuana and smoking. So when we look at all this, if somebody is a heavy smoker and smoke marijuana, should we only start screening at the age of 55, as the study did? Well, the problem when we do these big studies, we really take a more heterogeneous group of people rather than cherry-pick select group. So, in my opinion, those who are exposed to marijuana and smoking and those exposed to asbestos and smoking, I think those ones need to have the screening done at the age younger than 55.
Okay.
I might also add that people who have strong family history of cancer, any kind of cancer, I think those people, there is more damaging effect from smoking on them than on the other smokers who don't have strong family history of cancer. So if somebody has strong family history and they're heavy smokers, maybe those also need a little bit more close attention and maybe earlier screening and earlier attention than the rest of the population.
So you look at a combination of all those risk factors, and if these studies showed that heavy smokers benefit greatly from screening at 55, then someone with multiple factors would benefit greatly perhaps from screening at 45 or, you know, younger ages.
Exactly. And exactly, John. And in fact, we have applied that rule to mammography. So women with a strong family history of breast cancer, we don't start the mammography at the regular, like, let's say, 50 years of age, like the Canadians do and some people in the U.S. do. We started at least at the age of 40 because we know those people, when they develop cancer, they, number one, they are at higher risk, and number two, they actually develop it at an earlier age. On average, people who have family history of cancer, when they develop cancer, their age at diagnosis is at least 12 years younger than the other patients with the same disease who do not have family history. I really like this epidemiological studies because sometimes when we do things, just standardize them like algorithm, it actually makes you lose some key advantages. Of course, when you do these big studies, it's hard to stratify, we call it in research, stratify into different categories. But once we get the result, then the clinicians, we know who are the very high risks, and then we act accordingly.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, you're able to look at somebody and say you have this risk factor, and diagnose and say, okay, I think you should get a CAT scan even before 55 because it, you know, could really help in prevention.
Exactly. In fact, I was talking to one of the docs from the Dr. Lange a few days ago about this study, and he said, oh, I didn't know. Why don't you send me the link? So what I did, I drafted a letter explaining all these things to the local physicians, about 600 physicians, send them all these nicely printed letters. Because, you know, medicine is expanding so fast. The knowledge is exploding, and that's why we have a specialist. And I don't want the family docs who have to deal with heart and with lung diseases and with cancer and with diabetes. They just don't have time to catch up with everything discovered. I feel it's our duty, the specialist, to educate them about key issues and key discoveries that are very relevant to their practices.
That makes sense. Like you said, a family doctor has to keep on so many things. If somebody is listening to us today and is realizing, you know, I have a risk factor for lung cancer or multiple of these risk factors you're talking about, should they take the initiative and ask their family doctor about getting a CAT scan?
Absolutely. I think they should. In fact, we occasionally, when people have very high risk for cancer, especially family history, occasionally they go directly to the oncologist.
And that's an option too.
That's an option because, again, it gets very complicated, like the issue of asbestos exposure, marijuana, family history, other risk factors. Again, these are becoming very complicated, and I am afraid that some family doctors or most family doctors do not have enough time to learn about these things and catch up with them as they evolve. So I do believe that patients should have the right to go ahead and seek a specialist when they feel that maybe they should do that.
That makes a lot of sense.
And most specialists are more than willing to sit down and discuss those risk factors to those patients. And there are methods you can also help them prevent diseases. Like if somebody is a smoker, I know I have learned with my experience, you keep telling them, please quit smoking, please use the patch or use the electric cigarette. You know what's the most effective method I have found works for smoking?
Which one is that?
I tell them, you know what, keep smoking because that will keep people like me in business and buy nice cars. And you know what?
And that motivates them.
Real motivation. Ah, I don't want this guy to get rich, so they quit.
There you go.
But there are things they can do, like take aspirin. Taking aspirin, believe it or not, is probably the best thing any human being can do. It does lower the risk of most cancers.
You know, maybe sort of to wrap it up, as you mentioned at the very beginning of the interview, that there's those three ways that you basically battle cancer, and that's prevention, early detection, and then obviously treatment after the fact. And you know, today we're talking about early detection, and that's definitely important. But like you said, you can advise people in the prevention as well.
Yep.
Dr. Nash Gabriel from the Gabriel Cancer Center, it's been great talking with you again this morning. Some good things, and hopefully we will have just sparked interest in somebody to say, you know, I've got some risk factors for lung cancer, and this is something that I should look into.
Absolutely. And that's the reason why we do the media avenues, because I think there is so much knowledge exploding that it's our duty to share all this knowledge so that the public know what we say.
And we appreciate your help in doing that and passing along this information. So thank you so much.
Thank you, John.